Hello and welcome to the Study Legal English podcast. I am your host, Louise, and today I'm joined by Katrina Crossley, who is the CEO of the International Law Book Facility. So, hi, Katrina.
Hello, Louise.
So, thank you for coming on the show. The International Law Book Facility provides really great quality secondhand legal textbooks for not-for-profit organisations around the world, helping hundreds of organisations who need legal resources for their work. So we'll go into the questions. So can you tell me a little bit more about what the Law Book Facility is? Can you give some more details?
I can, thank you. You've given a very good introduction already, but just to say a little bit more about what the International Law Book Facility is. We're a small UK-based charity run by volunteers. We've been going since 2005, so this is our 12th year of operation. And in that time, we've sent about 50,000 books to over 150 organisations in 49 countries. So we have quite a wide reach.
And can you tell me a little bit about the history of the organisation?
Yes. The ILBF was set up in 2005 when we were actually launched, but the idea started a little bit before that, I think around 2003. Lord Thomas, who had just retired as the Lord Chief Justice of England, at the time was a Court of Appeal judge. I think he was working with a delegation of Ugandan judges in the UK. They'd come over for sharing of experiences and so forth, and they mentioned the lack of commercial law textbooks in Uganda. And Lord Thomas thought, along with a couple of other colleagues, that this was an opportunity because London at the time was awash with second-hand law books, and is still today. So he thought, well, it's crazy that books are being thrown away when they could be sent to Uganda, for example, to provide useful resources to the judges. So that's where the idea came from. A few of us got together and expanded on this idea and thought about how we could set it up, how it would work, and the books started to be donated pretty regularly. People began to hear about the ILBF, so they were making their applications, and it just grew from that. So it started with Lord Thomas, with Nicholas Munday, who at the time was at Clifford Chance, Paul Lowenstein, who still today is our Chair of Trustees. They got together and fleshed out what this could look like, and we had the involvement of Clifford Chance all the way along, but we realised that the best way to work it would be through using volunteers to try and keep our costs as low as possible. Mm-hmm. And we've been very successful at that for the last 12 years. So that's really how it started.
And why did you get involved with the Law Book Facility?
At the time it was set up, I was working with LexisNexis. Mm-hmm. And I had worked with Book Aid International, because there is a relationship between Book Aid International and LexisNexis, and LexisNexis' parent company, who is RELEX Group. And I have a legal background myself. I qualified as a barrister and took my legal skills to work for Butterworth, as it was at the time. My whole career has been around books and the importance of books and working with authors who are judges, who are practitioners or professors. Mm-hmm. And so I have a real interest in publishing per se, but also the importance of printed materials. You can't have a legal system without access to materials that help you as a practitioner understand the law, apply the law, formulate a strong argument based on the precedent set in the law report. So for me, it made perfect sense to try and find a way to reuse legal textbooks that are no longer up to date and valid in the UK, but still have a value around the rest of the world. I jumped into the project straight away, and as with a number of people who are still involved with the charity, I've been there since the very beginning. So I've seen it grow from its very early tentative start to where it is today, which is a very confident and successful small charity.
And what sort of organisations do you help?
We help organisations who are involved in access to justice. And that can be anything from a law school, a university legal department, prisons, police colleges, judiciaries, law commissions, access to justice organisations, pretty much any public-facing organisation who's involved in the law in some way, because what we are providing is legal resources to help them in their studies or in their work.
Can you give any examples of organisations you've helped, like specific ones?
Yes, we've sent books, as I was saying just now, we've sent books to 49 countries around the world, pretty much every continent.
Yeah.
And For example, we sent books to the Supreme Court in Guyana to help them.
Gosh.
We've sent books to the African Prisons Project, which is a very interesting project in the Uganda and Kenyan prisons, which helps prisoners and prison staff do their legal diploma and then go on to be able to advise their own, other prisoners and to help their own legal cases.
Mm-hmm.
We've sent books to the Law Commission in Uganda to help them with the revision of their laws on the laws of trust.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the process of putting together a very big shipment for Papua New Guinea, a large mm-hmm. country with a relatively small population, and they're really keen to make access to justice available in the regions of Papua New Guinea, so people don't just have to rely on going to the capital.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to build regional law libraries.
Mm-hmm.
Very recently, we've sent books to the law school in Eritrea. We've sent books to the university in Ghana this year. We've sent a huge shipment, actually, to Nepal,
mm-hmm.
to the Attorney General's office, to a couple of universities in Kathmandu, to the National Judicial Training College, a great variety of different organisations mm-hmm. across the globe.
And because presumably the law books are based on UK law, or maybe there's some international law books as well, are these still helpful for the organisations in other countries?
Very much so, because whilst many, in fact, all countries publish their own laws, those laws are not always readily available. Perhaps
mm-hmm.
there's no local legal publishing, perhaps the books are very expensive. So our books help two different groups of people. Those countries whose legal system, because they're part of the Commonwealth, can bear some relation to the UK legal system, where their laws are based on a common law system, as we have in the UK. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's one
mm-hmm.
way of helping, because we're providing materials that they don't have themselves, and their own systems are similar to the UK. The other way we help is through providing information about how the UK legal system works, which is useful for comparison purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you're a country that is looking to revise its banking law or its commercial law or its criminal law or family law,
mm-hmm.
any area of law, in fact, it's useful to see how other countries have implemented new regulations, whether that can be around how you manage copyright or how you manage the internet or how
mm-hmm.
you allow people to have bank loans.
Mm-hmm.
Our books are useful for comparison purposes, so that it's possible to look at how the UK have done something, and either the country might decide, yes, that seems to be a way of doing it that's working well, or we want to do something very different. So
mm-hmm.
it provides that useful background for comparison purposes.
Yes. And so how do people get involved? How do people get involved with you as a charity and as someone who can access the books?
I'll start with your second question
mm-hmm,
first.
Mm-hmm.
We receive applications for books via our website
mm-hmm.
online. So it's a simple online form which asks the organisation to tell us something about them, the users of their library is, how many people use the library, what sort of books they would like, and other sorts of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we receive their application, we process that. We do our due diligence to make sure that they are who they say they are, that it's
mm-hmm.
an organisation we are able to support that fits with our charitable status. And then once that process is finished, then we schedule in the shipments to them. If we can, we like to be able to send a shipment to several organisations in one country, because that's more cost effective. So we might save up a number of applications until we have two or three
mm-hmm.
for one particular country, and then we send a big shipment all in one go. We don't
mm-hmm.
always do that, but we will if we can. So that's how you apply for books. In terms of how people get involved with the organisation, we have volunteers from across the legal profession in the UK, and they get involved because we're becoming more well known. Certainly through the number of donations we receive, we are quite well known with law firms, with barristers' chambers, with courts, with colleges, and so forth. So if people have a burning desire to help us, they get in touch, or through our own networking, that's how people get involved, because we are essentially run by volunteers, so we rely very heavily on people's goodwill and their desire to do something, take on a pro bono activity that's going to be beneficial to organisations around the world.
And so you mentioned there some law firms universities and things like that, they get involved. So is that where the majority of the books come from?
I would say that most of the books come from law firms, barristers' chambers, from the courts. We have a very good process for collecting up old editions at the Royal Courts of Justice, where the judges can, when they're able to, donate old editions that they no longer need to the library. We have a very new program, actually, with several UK universities in conjunction with an organisation called the Junior Lawyers Against Poverty, which was set up under the auspices of the Lawyers Against Poverty and Oxfam. And in the universities, we are now working with the students so that the students can collect the book, pack the book, and in some cases fundraise to help pay for the shipment. And that's a new programme for us, which is very exciting. We're hoping to extend that so that if the university wants to create a relationship with the organisation who received the book, they can do that over time, whether that's students sharing their experiences about what it's like to study law, access to resources, that kind of thing. They can do that in the future. And I suppose there is no one major donor of books. The books come from all over the place, and including the publishers. Some of the legal publishers, like LexisNexis, are very supportive and retain the books that would otherwise be waste stock. They donate to the ILBF, which is incredibly helpful.
And what makes an organisation eligible for your books? Is there like a specific criteria that they have to fulfil?
Essentially, they have to be a public organisation, so a not-for-profit. So we don't send books to law firms or individual practitioners. We send books to organisations like universities, law commissions, judiciaries, that are public organisations in need of resources that we're able to provide. Law associations, bar councils, that kind of thing.
Okay, and you've sort of mentioned that the organisation is pretty much run by volunteers. Can you explain any more about how it's run?
Yes, we have trustee meetings with our 8 trustees, 3 or 4 times a year. The trustees work with me. I'm the CEO, so I try to keep tabs on everything that's happening within the charity. The trustees help to set the direction, help to network, to fundraise, to raise awareness of the work of the ILBS. The operating committee works on the sort of the day-to-day practical side of the law book facility, which is working very closely with the donations of books to make sure that we can be as efficient as possible. So if a law school says they have a large donation of books, then it makes sense for them to pack the books for a particular recipient, but that takes a little bit of organising. We have a very good relationship with Clifford Chance, who provide huge support to us in terms of governance. So as a charity registered in the UK, there are very strict requirements set by the Charities Commission as to how a charity is run, so that you have complete transparency, you have accountability, and that you comply with all the regulations around data protection and so on and so forth. So Clifford Chance provide that governance backup, which is absolutely essential to a small charity like the ILBF, to make sure that we comply with the regulations set down by the Charity Commission. And that's quite time consuming, and I'm incredibly grateful to a chance for the support that they give us in that respect. They also very kindly provide storage facilities, because we don't have an office. We are an office-free charity, very much the modern way, but because we're dealing with very practical physical objects, the books need to live somewhere, and so Clifford Chance provide the storage facilities for us. We have about 9,000 or so books in our storage facility at the moment, which actually is an absolutely vital resource. We couldn't function without that. So we work very closely with a number of other partner organisations, and increasingly so, because there are a number of organisations in the UK who support different aspects of the access to justice and the rule of law. There are organisations like the Flynn Foundation who send judges out once they're invited to deliver judicial training. The Department for International Development has a rule of law programme, which again supports different organisations around the world, particularly in terms of training. So increasingly the International Law Book Facility is working with those organisations to support what they are doing, so that training is delivered, and then if books are required afterwards to support that training, the ILBF can send the books in.
Yeah, very helpful to have those partnerships. And so what do you hope in the future for the organisation?
For the future, I would really like the universities programme to take off, so mm-hmm. that we can start to build, or the university can take it upon themselves to build links with universities and law students around the world. Increasingly in a global world, it's very important for those, even more important now, for those links to develop between, so people can support each other through their careers, whether they're based in South Africa or Guyana or Ethiopia or the UK or Nepal or Papua New Guinea, to create a, I suppose, in my mind, a community of the next generation of lawyers. There are international organisations like the IBA, the International Bar Association, who are very supportive of what we're doing, who have junior lawyer groups, but at the sort of even more junior level where they're law students. It would be great to be able to make that possible for students to interact with each other. Mm-hmm. But we continue to support judicial training, revising of laws through the Law Commission, organisations like the African Prisons Project. So I guess it's a long-winded way of saying that we do more of the same, mm-hmm. but even more effectively and more broadly than we are at the moment.
Brilliant. Great. Okay. Do you have any other points that you think you want to make?
I think the only thing I'd like to add is that we are always keen to receive applications for the book. Mm-hmm. We may not be able to satisfy those applications very quickly, because that depends very much on our funds at the time, how many volunteers we have to help, but we are always keen to have more applications for books. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage any organisations who may be listening to this podcast, or if someone listening to the podcast is a member of an organisation they feel may benefit from the book, to speak mm-hmm. to their colleagues and to make an application, because we have a lot of very good quality UK legal textbooks of all subjects. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we have law reports, we have encyclopedias like Waterloo's Laws, Acting Court Forms, Encyclopedia of Forms and Precedents. Mm-hmm. We have textbooks in all practice areas. So mm-hmm. we have pretty much the full range of legal material available to donate to organisations. And it's a fairly straightforward process.
So the books are solely in English. Is there scope in the future, do you think, to receive books from other jurisdictions in other languages?
There is that potential. In fact, in the past, we have worked with colleagues at Next in Paris and the Office of Clifford Chance in Paris. Together, they put together a collection of French language, French law books, which mm-hmm. were then sent to Francophone countries that were sent to, I believe it was Niger, mm-hmm. Senegal, and Cambodia, mm-hmm. where French law is very relevant. So there is the potential to do that. That requires volunteers probably on the ground to be collecting the books in those languages, but there's no reason why we couldn't do that. We certainly have a lot of international law textbooks in English, because obviously international law, if a country signed up to a convention, then it knows no borders. International law applies. So international law textbooks, human rights textbooks, immigration law, all of those subjects are very popular with the organisations that we support.
Brilliant. Okay, so that brings us to the end of the interview. So thank you, Katrina.
And my pleasure.
Thank you. Brilliant. And for people who are listening, who are interested in the International Law Book Facility, maybe if you want to donate some books, or if you are an organisation who's interested in receiving books, then you can find more information at www.ilbf.org.uk. That's ilbf.org.uk. So if you've got any questions, of course, head over to studylegalenglish.com, or you can, of course, get in touch with Katrina, I'm sure, if you go to the website. And so thanks for listening, and see you next time.